Good Monday morning, and today is solstice. This is today and tomorrow will be the two shortest daylight days of our year, and then we'll start seeing it get longer. I am bringing you readings today from the Herald and Review and from the Herald Tribune. This is Kathy for December the 21st, 2015. I'll start with the front page of today's Herald and Review. Council takes up Holiday Inn incentives and property taxes by Allison Petty. The Decatur City Council will consider offering incentives to spur construction of a Holiday Inn and Suites and accompanying restaurant on the city's north side. Under the proposal, the city would share half the proceeds from the hotel use tax generated by the hotel for 5 years. City Manager Tim Gleason said the incentives are identical to what the council approved in October for the development of a new Hampton Inn on the city's east side. It's a high traffic area, which makes it obviously more accessible and more desirable, he said. It's going to be one of those hotels where it's a first look type of hotel. The developer, Pace Hospitality LLC, plans to build a hotel on a vacant 3.55 acres at 5150 Wingate Drive. The 114-room hotel would be accompanied by a Burger Theory restaurant, which is associated with the hotel chain in several cities. A memo to council members estimates that the project would represent $9 million investment in construction, providing 65 local construction jobs and beginning in the first quarter of 2016. Construction is expected to take 9 to 15 months. When completed, the hotel will support 50 full-time equivalent employees, the city said. In other business, the council will consider setting its property tax levy for the coming year at $13.5 million, a 14.6% increase over the previous year. The average owner of a $100,000 home would pay $52 extra as a result of the change, making their total bill from the city about $445. Based on an estimated 1.1% increase in property values, the property tax rate would be $1.63 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. City officials have said the measure is necessary after years without a significant property tax levy increase. Even as the city's expenses have risen and other revenues such as sales tax stayed flat, a public hearing on the levy was conducted on December 7th. Gleason said that budget talks were pushed later into this year by a series of unforeseen circumstances, including the death of Mayor Michael Roy and subsequent process to seat a new mayor and council member. Ideally, you would start talking about the budget seriously 3 months in advance, he said. That's a September discussion rolling into a late November, first meeting in December approval. Circumstances totally drove the cards that we were dealt. The Decatur City Council meets tonight at 5:30 p.m. in the Council Chambers, third floor of the Decatur Civic Center on Gary K. Anderson Plaza. The meeting agenda and council packet are available under the Council Meetings section at decaturil.gov. Also on the front page, Mosaic will give glory in glass. From Effingham, in the rich mosaic of life, Christmas is a time of gifts. An Effingham physician, Reuben Boyajian, is a firm believer in the gospel that says it is far better to give than to receive. The general surgeon who specializes in breast surgery is already known for his precisely sliced and to scale gingerbread house creations. These annual gifts to the community have included painstaking representations of local building landmarks and even the White House. Now the good doctor is involved in an artistic operation, a cut above even all that, and has laid aside his gingerbread in favor of mosaic glass pieces and a project that will take him 3 years to complete. Behold, Dr. Boyajian's mosaic rendition of the Canticle of Brother's Son, named for a song in praise of God and his elemental creation, written by St. Francis of Assisi in 1224. This mosaic picture will consist of three panels, each 9 feet high and 8 feet wide. The grand work is designed to grace an arched wall fronting windows that give on to the healing garden at HSH's St. Anthony Memorial Hospital, where Boyajian is director of Women's Wellness Center. The surgeon is now busy working on it in the carpeted depths of his home basement workshop. Giving a quick tour, he shows off a first panel featuring a blazing Mediterranean sun flashing light beams out of a sky rendered in multiple hues of blue. The light illuminates the Basilica of St. Francis built in Assisi. It houses his remains. And the Gothic masterpiece is full of stained glass windows that the surgeon's long and delicate fingers are itching to duplicate in fragments of mosaic cut precisely to shape. That part is going to be challenging, and I love it, he says with a smile as bright as his cold mosaic sun. I can't wait. Drawings for panel 2 show St. Francis in a garden-like setting, communing with animals and accompanied by St. Clare, who, legend says, built a home for him with her fellow members of the Order of the Poor Ladies when he was gravely ill and wrote the canticle. Laid out in sketch form, it's easy to see how the colors of nature will blaze brightly under the surgeon's loving hand, while overhead a swirling blue Van Gogh-like blue sky crowns the picture. In the final image, the canticle combines with more recent history. Flames burst out of the third panel, lapping at the original St. Anthony's Hospital that suffered a devastating fire in 1949 in which 72 people died. It's still rated America's worst hospital conflagration. And yet from the ashes came the faith to build the present medical center. The last part of the image will show a dove soaring away from the flames and winging its way towards the current hospital's chapel. Below that is the final line of St. Francis's song to God. Praise and bless my Lord, and give him thanks, and serve him with great humility. Which pretty much sums up Boagian's prescription for a healthy existence. He liked St. Francis because he lived a life devoted to praising God by helping others, and his devotion inspired the congregation of the Hospital Sisters of the Third Order, Regular of St. Francis, that founded St. Anthony's Hospital in 1875. The surgeon says the Effingham Hospital and others like it were created around the idea of giving something back to your community, and so the mosaic is his gift, paid with countless hours of his own time. The idea of giving is what motivates me, says Boyajian, who looks a little embarrassed. I suppose I am kind of an idealist. But still, a realist with a pulse rate not immune to the size of the undertaking stretching before him in thousands of pieces of glass, imported from Italy in more than 200 color and shade variations. He started the sketch and design work a year ago and expects to have the first panel ready for installation by April, God willing. And we just can't wait to see it, says Terry Ann Tharp, Division Director of Marketing and Communications for HSHS St. Anthony's, with HSHS standing for Hospital Sisters Health System, which now runs the place. Knowing Dr. Boagian's talent, we know it's going to be marvelous. So, no additional pressure on the surgeon who comes home, eats dinner, and spends time with his family when he is not on call, and then heads to the basement to lay hands on St. Francis again. He gets so into it sometimes he's still down there placing and cutting and replacing mosaic pieces at 2 a.m. Other times he wakes up before dawn from fitful dreams about his grand undertaking. Chinks of doubt lodged in his mind. I'm thinking, can I do this or not? I must be nuts, he recalls with a smile. But the glazed look in his eyes never lasts long, and the man who earns his living saving people by cutting bad bits out of them transmutes feelings of pressure into inspiration. I say this with all humility, he says, but I really do perform better under stress. This next article is the last big one on the front page. Kidney Transplant Eligibility Priorities Shifted by Laura Neergard. A shakeup of the nation's kidney transplant system means that more organs are getting to patients once thought nearly impossible to match, according to early tracking of the new rules. It's been a year since the United Network for Organ Sharing changed rules for the transplant waiting list, aiming to decrease disparities and squeeze the most benefit from a scarce resource, kidneys from deceased donors. Now, data from UNOS shows that the changes are helping certain patients, including giving those expected to live the longest a better shot at the fittest kidneys. The hope is to really level the playing field, said Dr. Mark Ader, a transplant surgeon at University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland, who is chairman of the UNOS's Kidney Committee. In Abington, Virginia, 8-year-old Marshall Jones was one of the lucky first recipients. A birth defect that severely damaged his kidneys and a failed transplant when he was younger left his immune system abnormally primed to reject kidneys from 99% of donors. Then last January, after 4 years of searching, organ officials found a possible match, hours away by a plane, but available under the new policy, and it worked. We don't use the word lightly, but this was really a miracle kidney for him, said Dr. Victoria Norwood, Marshall's doctor and the pediatric nephrology chief at the University of Virginia. There's a huge gap between who needs a new kidney and who gets one. More than 101,000 people are on the national waiting list, while only about 17,000 kidney transplants are performed each year. Roughly 11,000 of them are with kidneys donated from someone who just died. The rest occur when a patient is able to find a living donor. The wait for a deceased donor kidney varies widely around the country, and in 2014, more than 4,500 people died before their turn. The new kidney allocation system can't alleviate the overall organ shortage. The only thing to shorten total wait time for everybody is more organ donors, Ader said. Instead, the policy altered now deceased donor kidneys are how deceased donor kidneys are distributed, shifting priorities so that how long you've been on the waiting list isn't the main factor among the changes. Fewer transplants are occurring in which the kidney is predicted to outlive the recipient. Now the kidneys expected to last the longest, as calculated by donor age and medical history, are offered first to the patients expected to survive the longest. That's called longevity matching. Before the change, 14% of the longest-lasting kidneys went to recipients age 65 or older. That dropped to 5% as the new policy kicked in, according to UNOS's monitoring. The less time spent on dialysis, the better patients fare after a transplant. Yet, where you live still plays a big role in how quickly you're put on the transplant list, with minorities and those in rural and poorer areas spending more time on dialysis first. The new policy gives people credit for their dialysis time, moving them up on the waiting list and boosting transplants among long-time dialysis users, UNOS found. In turn, transplants inched up among African Americans, who spend disproportionately more time on dialysis users, UNOS found. Then there are those hardest-to-match patients, as Marshall, about 8,000 of them now on the waiting list. The new policy gives them special priority for organs that can be shipped to a wider area of the country than other kidneys, broadening the search for a super rare match. As a result, the percentage of transplants among those patients has risen nearly fivefold, UNOS senior research scientist Darren Stewart said. UNOS is tracking the changes closely to look for unintended problems, because more transplants for one group can mean fewer for another. For example, adults younger than age 50 are getting more kidneys since the rule change, but older patients still account for about half the transplants. Another question is how the new policy will work long-term as a backlog of special case patients starts to clear. All of a sudden, you've got a floodgate that opens because you gave these people a big advantage, and you're shipping kidneys across the country to them, said Dr. John Roberts, transplant chief at the University of California, San Francisco, one of the largest kidney programs. He praised the rule change, but said it may need fine-tuning. For example, the new policy also offers wider access to the kidneys expected to last the shortest amount of time, because the oldest or sickest patients might choose one for a quicker transplant, rather than gambling that a fitter one will become available. But we don't have a great way to predict what's coming for a patient to help them decide, Roberts said. Discards of those less fit kidneys temporarily increased a bit as the new policy began. Transplant centers are learning to handle the logistic hurdles of shipping more kidneys around the country, potentially opening additional venues to alleviate geographic disparities, Ader said. There's much more to come. State may eye fund sweeping. Half a year into its deepening budget crisis, the state of Illinois. State may eye fund sweeping. Half a year into its deepening budget crisis, the state of Illinois is sitting on at least $4 billion in cash. An Associated Press analysis of state records finds the money in 531 accounts set up for special and specific purposes. The precedent shows that lawmakers and governors in less anxious times have dipped into those accounts to pay regular state expenses and stave off financial distress. 2 weeks ago, Democratic lawmakers agreed with Republican Governor Bruce Rauner on tapping a total of $3 billion from 112 of the special state funds, all bet to finance those funds' intended purposes. The short-term spending plan sent more than $1 billion owed to cities and counties in tax revenue from income, fuel, gambling, and more, as well as providing $400 million to keep state agencies operating and paying other bills. Debate on the plan resurrected the often pejorative term fund sweeps among capital chatter. It's a practice of taking money for one purpose to pay for something else that gained notoriety during the tenure of former Governor Rod Blagojevich, who took office in 2003 amid budget woes that continue to linger. As recently as March, Democrats and Rauner agreed on $1.3 billion in sweeps to fill a hole in last fiscal year's budget that opened when Rauner insisted that a temporary income tax hike be rolled back as planned. It was the largest of such sweeps conducted in Illinois since 2003. The special funds cover varied, sometimes obscure areas of interest. As of December 15th, the date of the state comptroller's data the AP analyzed, there was $29 million in various whistleblower accounts raised from citizen lawsuits over bureaucratic skullduggery. There also was $205 million in a fund to complement regular state school spending, $3.6 million in rail freight carrier loan repayments, a Healthy Smiles fund of $205,000 to promote oral health, and $12 million to assist cities in raising abandoned structures. No one has suggested sweeps as a mean of breaking the continuing logjam Rauner and lawmakers have over a spending plan that should have taken effect July 1st. One lawmaker has suggested the opposite. GOP Representative David Harris of Arlington Heights is pushing legislation to free up the untouched billions, not for general expenses, but for their intended targets. For example, one of the funds helps counties pay the salaries of state's attorneys. Williamson County in Southern Illinois filed a lawsuit Friday seeking its share of that money. The number two House Democrat, Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry, sponsored the stopgap plan that was approved this month. During debate, she uttered the contentious term, pointing out that Rauner had initially opposed the idea and speculated that he might be eyeing the funds for an old-fashioned sweep. Rauner spokeswoman Catherine Kelly would not comment on the idea. Curry is agreeable if it's done judiciously, paid out from funds that won't suffer distress and is part of the larger budget deal. But it's not optimal, she said. You create the special funds to serve special purposes, and once you begin saying open sesame, we can just take whatever we like, that's not a good way to run things, in part because it raises expectations that you have resources that you don't have next year, she said. All told, the AP analysis found at least 745 funds with a $6 billion balance as of early last week. But $469 million is from the federal government and has strings attached. Another $1.4 billion needs no legislative approval to be spent, so they're immune to being rerouted, according to Charles Wheeler III, a professor of the University of Illinois at Springfield. Wheeler, who has watched Illinois budget making for 45 years, isn't a fan, calling the sweeps practice misleading at best and downright deceptive at worst. For example, someone who threw an income tax checkoff contributes to the preservation of non-game wildlife. A fund with $1.5 million last week might object upon learning that it paid for another service. Harris said Rauner's office asked him to hold off on his bill, but noted that he'll pick up the campaign again next month when lawmakers return to session. But he knows political winds shift quickly, particularly with $4 billion or more in the mix. That's a significant amount of money that would be tempting for anybody looking at a budget problem, he said. Birchbox honored for superior training. Gary and Andy Birchbox, owner-operators of three Decatur-area McDonald's, are the recipients of the Alpha Award from the Regional Operators Association for the Greater Chicago Region. The honor recognizes organizations that put an emphasis on the training of their staff members, resulting in a better experience for their customers. We have always conducted our business by trying to do the right things for the right reasons and not for awards, but it sure feels good when you get recognized by your peers, Gary Birchbox said. While I have received recognition in the past, this was especially rewarding because of the impact Andy has made since becoming an approved operator, Birchbox said. There are many tools in the McDonald's toolbox to maximize the potential of our people, and Andy has utilized many of them and has even enhanced them. The father-son team are the owners of the Water Street and Pilot McDonald's in Decatur and the McDonald's in Forsyth. Kids in Fitness North achieved Silver Circle ranking. Kids in Fitness North has earned a Silver Circle of Quality in the Accelerate Illinois program. Accelerate Illinois recognizes early learning providers throughout the state who make quality a priority. A Silver Circle program goes beyond quality standards in the areas of learning environment and teaching quality, administrative standards, and staff training and education. In order to achieve the Silver Circle ranking, the staff at Kids in Fitness North had to increase their continuing education hours from 15 to 20 annually. They also had to complete lengthy self-assessments and a stringent review process by outside early learning experts. The Kids and Fitness North model is a one-of-a-kind approach to prepare children for a lifetime of healthy living, grounded on a foundation of academics. The students continuously rank at the top of the list in kindergarten readiness. Kids and Fitness North is located at 535 West Marion Avenue in Forsyth. For more information, stop by or give them a call. Gailey Eye Clinic welcomes Miller. Gailey Eye Clinic is pleased to welcome optometrist David Miller to its team of physicians. Dr. Miller began practicing at Gailey's Decatur office located at 646 West Pershing Road on November 30th. Dr. Miller was born and raised in Decatur. After graduating from Indiana University School of Optometry, he returned to his beloved hometown. He has enjoyed a long and successful career, providing primary eye care to the community of Decatur for many years. Dr. Miller is an excellent optometrist. I've had the pleasure of working with him on a referral basis for many years, and I'm happy to welcome him to the Gailey team, said Dr. Robert M. Lee, president of the Gailey Eye Clinic. For more information about Gailey Eye Clinic's locations, providers, and services, visit www.gaileyeyeclinic.com. To schedule an appointment or to inquire about previously scheduled appointments, contact the clinic at 1-800-325-7706. Gailey Eye Clinic provides comprehensive eye care, including laser cataract surgery, bladeless LASIK, glaucoma treatment, retina and cornea care, and routine eye exams. Gailey Eye Clinic operates 2 surgery centers and 14 clinics throughout central Illinois and have a team, 9 ophthalmologists and 7 optometrists. And I think I'll finish up with a little bit of information from the Tribune. This is Paul Osborne's City Beat. The Grinch strikes. City Council to vote on raising property taxes. Fresh off of voting to approve a big jump in our utility tax, more than triple, at its last meeting, the City Council appears ready to vote to raise our taxes again at Monday night's meeting. This time it's to increase our property taxes. We must have really been bad little boys and girls this year to receive these socks full of coal, or Mr. Grinch is determined to ruin Christmas for Decatur residents. An increase in the hotel use tax from 6% to 8% was also approved at the last council meeting, which doesn't impact residents like the utility and property taxes, but still it is a tax increase. If approved as proposed on Monday night, the property tax levy for next year would increase by about $1.725 million over last year and add an estimated $52 to the tax bill of the owner of a $100,000 home. Why does the City of Decatur need the tax increase? This is how it was explained on a special study session on the budget on December 3rd. The last several years have been marked by declines in assessed property valuations, with current projections calling for only a light rebounding in 2015. The city's EAV fell from $928 million in levy year 2009 to $822 million in levy year 2014. A $106 million decline in assessed value. Even so, city property tax collection levels were maintained, even as public safety pension costs paid for property tax revenues increased and the TIF district property values were not assessed at levels to adequately cover debt costs, causing the general fund to absorb these increases. The result, a projected deficit of about $4.3 million, even as the city has reduced its number of budgeted employees by 73, 55 of which are funded by the general fund, resulting in a general fund reduction of $4.4 million in ongoing savings. Other cost-saving measures included cuts to the vehicle and equipment replacement programs, IT equipment replacement, and street replacement funding from sales and income tax. I think that sums up the reason, and the city needs more of our income, and, according to City Manager Tim Gleason, other taxes and fees will probably be in our future. I especially like Gleason's manner of telling taxpayers the brutal truth about the city's financial shortcomings, although the way the announcement of some of the proposed tax and fee increases, it seems to me, caught small businesses, owners, several of our industries, and many citizens by surprise, which has a tendency to tick off people and business owners. In fairness to Gleason, he hasn't been on the job long enough to have created the financial problems, and the present financial squeeze in several cases are beyond his control. He doesn't have a vote on council. All he can do is present options and deliver ways to deal with the city's financial problems. Ultimately, it's the mayor and the city council members who vote whether or not to raise our taxes. Nice surprise. I was driving to work one morning last week and received an early Christmas gift, both of the Route 51 Korean War Veterans Memorial bridges were open to traffic. The work on the two bridges has been going on for what seems like forever, with motorists practicing the delicate art of merging with other motorists in driving over the one bridge that was open to traffic while the other bridge was being repaired. It was a gift to drive north across the bridge and not have to go through a construction obstacle course to get across Lake Decatur. Although both lanes, as I write this column, are not open on either bridge, having one lane open on each bridge is a welcome relief. I am so very sorry to hear of the passing of World War II Marine veteran Rudy Escobar last week from natural causes at age 88. Rudy was a friend and commander of the Macon County Honor Guard, an organization that he co-founded and led for the past 20 years. I've always had a lot of respect for Rudy and the Honor Guard, and that was only enhanced during the years I served as mayor. I never attended any function where the presence of Rudy and the Honor Guard didn't add a special pride and feeling to the event. The volunteerism of this man in helping pay tribute to our heroes will not be forgotten, not by me and those who came in contact with him. The Macon County Honor Guard will continue without Rudy as their commander, but he will always be there in spirit. Great news! I want to end today's column with the great news announced last week that the 14th annual WSOY Community Food Drive raised 1.3 million pounds of food, and many of the volunteers were recognized at a special ceremony Wednesday for their work on the food drive. Thanks to my friends Brian Byers, Kevin Brehaney, Newhoff Media, and so many, many other volunteers, residents, and businesses for making this a record year. We certainly have our share of problems in our area these days, but the generosity of our residents is not one of them. Also from the Decatur Tribune, American Red Cross volunteers respond to area home fire. American Red Cross volunteers responded to a home fire in the 1,000 block of Andrew Street in Decatur. The fire occurred on Friday, December 18th, after a home fire. Red Cross volunteers ensure that everyone affected has a safe place to stay, food, clothing, and emotional support. We are currently assisting one adult and two children. In the American Red Cross serving South Central Illinois area annually on average, more than 225 families receive assistance after a disaster threatens to destroy their lives. In the fiscal year ending June 30, 2015, the American Red Cross serving South Central Illinois assisted 349 families after a disaster. Red Cross volunteers on the scene were members of your local disaster action team, a group of specially trained volunteers who respond to the scene of a disaster when called upon at any time of the day or night. The Red Cross recommends two easy steps to help protect your home and loved ones from a fire. Get a smoke alarm and create a fire escape plan. Jerry Taylor sentenced to 30 years for armed robbery and unlawful possession of weapon by a felon. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott has announced that Jerry Taylor, 36, of Decatur, has been sentenced to 30 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections for the armed robbery of the Circle K station at 3798 North Woodford in Decatur that occurred during the early morning hours of March 18th. Taylor was found guilty at a jury trial in April. For the crime of armed robbery, he was sentenced on December 17th by Judge R.C. Bollinger to 15 years in prison, plus a mandatory firearms enhancement of 15 years. A concurrent sentence of 14 years was imposed for the crime of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton, who prosecuted the case, requested sentences totaling 35 years. On March 18th, at approximately 2:25 a.m., the clerk at Circle K was robbed of United States currency at gunpoint. Taylor was the driver of the getaway car. At approximately 3:41 a.m., officers of the Decatur Police Department stopped the two robbers in the car in the 500 block of East El Dorado. A loaded .45 caliber semi-automatic handgun was recovered from the vehicle. Taylor has previous convictions for armed robbery in Macon County in 1997 and for drug trafficking in Atoka County, Oklahoma. He received 10-year prison sentences in both of those cases. This was yet another example of the good work of the Decatur Police Department and of Assistant State's Attorney Shelton, Scott said. And this is Kathy signing off. We will be back in a couple of minutes with the second half of the news from Decatur.